Savitri, Book 7, The Book of Yoga, Canto 5, The Finding of the Soul. This is part 1. It's on pages 522 and 523. Savitri is now well on the way to the cave of the soul. The cave of the soul is in her subtle heart. She has just met three of her own capacities, three forces or powers of her own soul. She spoke with the mother of compassion and pity, the mother of might and power, and the mother of light, joy, and peace. She has seen that each of these wonderful qualities has not been able to act successfully in the world. She has heard the voices of three aspects of mankind, which are freely acting according to their own ideas and refusing the influence of the three higher soul powers. The first one expressed his wrath, his anger at God and everything and everybody else. He blamed everybody else for his problems. He showed how selfish he was, doing everything only for himself. And we saw that actually he was enjoying his own sufferings, refusing to agree that there could be pity and compassion in the world. Then Savitri heard the voice of the ego of this great world of desire, who claimed earth and heaven for the use of man. He bragged that he was the reason that the earth was made. He claimed that he had grown greater than nature and wiser than God. He claimed all the high powers of the second soul force for himself. He refused to use any of it for the good works done by the soul force of might and power. The third voice from below was the sense-shackled mind of man, the mind of man on earth who refused to look beyond what the senses could perceive. He denied the presence of light and joy and peace. He claimed there was no reason to reach a greater consciousness even if that could be done, which he doubted. Each of these three lower voices show us an aspect or a capacity of man which is acting independently of man's other aspects and capacities. This is a classic example of how people can be when their soul is not awakened and its higher consciousness is not acting in all the different parts of their being. Now that Savitri is coming very near her soul, she is going to achieve the first major step in Sri Aurobindo's yoga. He calls it the psychic change. We will see that each aspect of her being has become ready to accept the fact that it needs the presence and guidance and power that only the soul can give. This means that each part of Savitri's being recognizes that it is nothing, that it can do nothing independently on its own. Sri Aurobindo explained what he means by the psychic change in some of his letters to the early ashramites. He said, "The psychic change means the change of the whole lower nature, bringing right vision into the mind, right impulse and feeling into the vital, right movement and habit into the physical, all turned towards the divine, all based on love, adoration, bhakti," and bhakti means devotion. He spoke of the fact that a second change, the spiritual change, would have to come in the practice of his yoga, and he explained why the psychic change should come first. He wrote in a letter that he used a particular word for the change. He said, "I have sometimes written of it as a psychization of the nature." In another letter, he wrote, "The psychic change is the first of two transformations necessary. If you have the psychic transformation, it facilitates immensely the second one, which is the change of the ordinary human consciousness into the higher spiritual consciousness. Otherwise, one is likely to have either a slow and dull or exciting but perilous journey." In yet another letter, he explained, "The psychic development and the psychic change of mind, vital, and physical consciousness is of the utmost importance because it makes safe and easy the descent of the higher consciousness and the spiritual transformation, without which the supramental must always remain far distant." All these letters come from the time that there were relatively few ashramites who had chosen to leave everything behind. They had come to Sri Aurobindo to do his yoga in the late 20s, in the 30s, in the 40s. Many were having experiences of the emergence of their psychic being, or they were experiencing resistance in their own nature to the process. They wrote to Sri Aurobindo asking for help and for explanations. The ashramites were encouraged to write letters. They were told they should always write their experiences because it kept them open to Sri Aurobindo's inner help. Here's part of one letter that Sri Aurobindo wrote about psychization. "Complete psychization brings entire openness of the being to the divine and to the higher consciousness, and an entire inability to accept anything untrue and undivine. Now Savitri is going to step into what Sri Aurobindo calls a night of God. It does not sound like a desirable consciousness to step into, but it is something wonderful, as we will see. When we look at each thing that she experiences, we will see that one by one, each part of her nature accepts its limitations, and each part gives up and turns towards the divine. This actual part of Savitri is not very long. Sri Aurobindo's descriptions here are not long. So it's worth following the subject of each of his statements here, because we can learn a lot more about them from his other writings." Sri Aurobindo writes that the power in Savitri's life, and then he speaks about the power in our life too, the power of our life that struggles and stumbles in its own small ignorant way, the small light of our individual consciousness formed over many lifetimes. This small light is quenched, like a candle that goes out. And then he lists each one of our parts, which finally gives up. He says Savitri's mind, which is so inefficient, and therefore ineffectual, gives up its thoughts. It knows that its thinking is not enough anymore. The heart, which struggles so hard, which strives and works so hard, the heart gives up the hopes which never brought the desired result. All Savitri's knowledge failed, and so did all the forms of ideas she had about things. And then he writes, "And wisdom screened in awe her lowly head, feeling a truth too great for thought or speech, formless, ineffable, forever the same." Sri Aurobindo uses the word awe here. This gives us some idea of how deeply affected Savitri is. Webster's English Dictionary says awe means reverent wonder tinged with fear, inspired by the sublime. Another definition is profound and reverent fear, inspired by deity. Quieting the mind is a very important part of all yogas. Sri Aurobindo writes about it a lot. He refers to it when he writes about the king's experience of knowing that the senses can't bring the truth of things to the mind. And at this time, the king also experiences being nothing, the way Savitri does. The king, in his inner travels, reaches the self of mind, and he thinks he can stay there. He has won the self and the silence. He thinks he has reached his goal of realization. But Sri Aurobindo writes, "Then, suddenly, a luminous finger fell on all things seen or touched or heard or felt, and showed his mind that nothing could be known. That must be reached, from which all knowledge comes. A doubt corroded even the means to think. Existence self was shadowed by a doubt. Almost it seemed a lotus leaf, afloat on a nude pool of cosmic nothingness." For Savitri, when each part gives up, and Savitri cannot even ask for salvation, Sri Aurobindo writes, "Humility now seemed too proud a state." Here is Mother's definition of humility. It fits exactly with the psychization of our being. She said, "To be humble means for the mind, the vital, and the body never to forget that without the divine, they know nothing, are nothing, and can do nothing. Without the divine, they are nothing but ignorance, chaos, and impotence. The divine alone is truth, life, power, love, felicity. This is the only true humility, and with it come quiet and peace. This is also the surest shield against all hostile attack. Humility and sincerity are the best safeguards. Without them, each step is a danger. With them, victory is certain. Sincere humility is the surest way to the indispensable dissolution of the ego. Whatever is your personal value, or even your individual realization, the first quality required in yoga is humility." So we see with what Mother says here that we start with humility, and all the way, finally, when we get to the point of realizing our soul, we are still with humility. Mother says, "True humility consists in knowing that the supreme consciousness, the supreme will alone exists, and that the I is not. We must learn that whatever our efforts, whatever our struggles, whatever even our victories, compared with the path still to be traversed, what we have already traveled is nothing. Do not think yourself big or small, very important or very unimportant, for we are nothing in ourselves. We must only live to become what the divine wills of us." One of the students in Mother's class asked, "What is the right and wrong way of being humble?" Mother answered, "It is very simple. When people are told, 'Be humble,' they think immediately of being humble before other men, and that humility is wrong. True humility is humility before the divine, that is, a precise, exact, living sense that one is nothing, one can do nothing, understand nothing without the divine. One's indisputable certainty in one's own rightness, one's cocksureness, is in proportion to one's unconsciousness. The more unconscious one is, the more one is sure of oneself. The most foolish are always the most vain. Your stupidity is in proportion to your vanity. In fact, there is a time when one is quite convinced that one knows nothing at all. One's conviction that one knows is in direct proportion to one's ignorance and stupidity. Here, when Savitri steps into the night of God, we can see that it is a necessary step as part of the psychic change. Her emptiness is a completeness of purification. Sri Aurobindo writes about how she knows nothing anymore because her mind gives up its thoughts and knowledge, and ideas failed, and wisdom gave up in awe, feeling the supreme, eternal, unchanging truth. This is the realization of humility that Mother speaks of. The description of Savitri in this state shows that her vital being gives up because it knows it can't get anything for itself. Sri Aurobindo writes, "There was no strength in her, no pride of force. The lofty burning of desire had sunk ashamed, a vanity of separate self. The hope of spiritual greatness fled. Salvation she asked not, nor a heavenly crown. Humility seemed now too proud a state." Here we see the clever play of the ego that goes its own way. It claims for its own even the attainment of salvation without any reliance on divine grace. It wants a crown for itself. Now it knows that heaven exists, so it wants a heavenly crown too. This is all going on behind the scenes of our ego. Mother teaches that our vital being, our personal collection of vital impulses and vital energies and vital desires, is our place of personal power. It is the home of our willpower. Therefore, since it is its own will, it is the last part of us that holds out against being converted. Because of this, when we have not realized our soul, and it is not governing our vital goes its own way, and we are pushed and pulled in every direction until we realize our soul, and we can control our own vital with the soul consciousness. But then, like all the other parts of the being, the vital still has to realize on its own that there is something higher than itself. Once it does that, all our power wants to work to help us realize our goal. Mother says that the converted vital becomes our greatest helper in yoga practice. Savitri's vital being has now understood that without God, it is really nothing at all. Sri Aurobindo writes, "Herself was nothing. God alone was all. Yet God she knew not, but only knew he was." In all her humility, Savitri has come to the point of complete self-honesty. Then Sri Aurobindo writes, "An innocent and holy ignorance adored, like one who worships formless God, the unseen light she could not claim nor own. In a simple purity of emptiness, her mind knelt down before the unknowable." The feeling of emptiness comes to people when they're doing Sri Aurobindo's yoga. One spends a lot of time rejecting habits, rejecting ideas, rejecting feelings, rejecting ways of looking at their own world, looking at themselves. The Ashramites wrote to Sri Aurobindo about their experiences of emptiness. Here are two of his responses. They clearly show that emptiness is a transitional state in Sri Aurobindo's yoga. In the first letter, he writes, "The emptiness that you describe in your letter was not a bad thing. It is this emptiness, inward and outward, that often in yoga becomes the first step towards a new consciousness. Man's nature is like a cup of dirty water. The water has to be thrown out, the cup left clean and empty for the divine liquor to be poured into it. Then someone must have written to him asking when they would have some good result after going through all this, and he wrote back, "It is not, however, a fact that the whole nature has to be emptied of the old things before there can be the light and grace. It is done usually in different parts of the nature at different times." We have seen that Savitri's mind and vital are now ready to accept the soul. The third part of the being is the physical body. Sri Aurobindo does not speak of it here. Savitri's body consciousness is far away. It has been left far behind because now she is in the deepest subtle body. Mother and Sri Aurobindo made it very clear that a person had to reach a certain stage in their spiritual evolution in order to do Sri Aurobindo's yoga. Mother said it was better not to start on the path and then have to give it up. It was better to wait. The yoga is our opening ourselves to the consciousness of future realizations. We have to be ready to do this. We have to be ready to receive the great and total power, the great and total change. Sri Aurobindo wrote about this when he wrote about himself doing his own yoga when he wrote about King Ashwapati. In Book 1, he writes that only a few people are given the kind of experiences like this wonderful night of God that Savitri goes through. The particular experience of the king in Book 1 seems to be similar to Savitri's night of God, but it is not to realize his soul. This happens to the king at a different place in his own yoga, but it is also a preparation to receive the higher forces coming into the being. Here is what Sri Aurobindo writes. To a few is given that godlike rare release. One, among many thousands never touched, engrossed in the external world's design, is chosen by a secret witness eye and driven by a pointing hand of light across his soul's unmapped immensitudes. A pilgrim of the everlasting truth, our measures cannot hold his measureless mind. He has turned from the voices of the narrow realm and left the little lane of human time. In the hushed precincts of a vaster plan, he treads the vestibules of the unseen, or listens, following a bodiless guide, to a lonely cry in boundless vacancy. All the deep cosmic murmur falling still, he lives in the hush before the world was born, his soul left naked to the timeless one. Far from compulsion of created things, thought and its shadowy idols disappear. The molds of form and person are undone. The ineffable wideness knows him for its own. In a minute, we'll see another experience of the king's. It is a similar experience to the experience of the self which Savitri has in the night of God. For Savitri, Sri Aurobindo writes that the void she was in held more than all the teeming worlds, and this blank felt more than all that time has borne, and this dark knew dumbly, immensely, the unknown. But all was formless, voiceless, infinite. He says, silent she moved, empty and absolute. In endless time her soul reached a wide end. the spaceless vast became her spirit's place. Savitri is out of time, because in endless time her soul has reached a wide end. She is out of space, but she still has an immortal spirit. The spaceless vast becomes her spirit's place. This close to finding her soul, as Savitri becomes both empty and absolute, we have seen how her mind and vital and ego simply gave up, and how she only knew that God was. When she also becomes absolute, it is through the connection her soul always has with the Supreme. Sri Aurobindo wrote in a letter that in the self, or pure existence, there is no time or space except spiritual space or wideness. In the silence of the self, there is no time. Is it possible to describe the self in its own silence? All spiritual seekers work towards having this experience. Both Sri Aurobindo and Mother had it. Mother speaks of her experiences in the agenda. Sri Aurobindo writes about his experiences in the Record of Yoga and in Savitri as the king. In Book 3 of Savitri, he writes about the self in such a way that he brings us the experience of the silence of the self. He writes, "All person perished in its namelessness. There was no second. It had no partner or peer. Only itself was real to itself. A pure existence, safe from thought and mood. A consciousness of unshared, immortal bliss. It dwelt aloof in its bare infinite, one and unique, unutterably soul. A being formless, featureless, mute, that knew itself by its own timeless self, aware forever in its motionless depths, uncreated, uncreating, and unborn. The one by whom all live, who lives by none. An immeasurable luminous secrecy guarded by the veils of the unmanifest above the changing cosmic interlude, abode supreme, immutably the same. A silent cause, occult, impenetrable, infinite, eternal, unthinkable, alone." Now that Savitri has experienced the formless, voiceless infinite and the spaceless vast and gone completely out of time, she is ready to receive the presence and power of her soul in all the parts of her being. In Book 3, Sri Aurobindo explains why the Night of God is just a step on the way. He writes, "An eye has opened upon timelessness. Infinity takes back the forms it gave. And through God's darkness, or his naked light, his million rays return into the sun. There is a zero sign of the Supreme. Nature, left nude and still, uncovers God. But in her grandiose nothingness, all is there. When her strong garbs are torn away from us, the soul's ignorance is slain, but not the soul. The zero covers an immortal face. A high and blank negation is not all. A huge extinction is not God's last word, life's ultimate sense, the close of being's course, the meaning of this great and mysterious world. In absolute silence sleeps an absolute power. Awaking it can awake the trance-bound soul, and in the ray reveal the parent sun. It can make the world a vessel of spirit's force. It can fashion in clay God's perfect shape. To free the self is but one radiant pace. Here, to fulfill himself, was God's desire. As Savitri moves, empty and absolute, Sri Aurobindo writes, at last a change approached. The emptiness broke. A wave rippled within. The world had stirred. Once more, her inner self became her space. There was felt a blissful nearness to the goal. Then Sri Aurobindo says, that day came into Savitri's night of God. Day came into the worshipping silence of her world. This is the symbol of the dawning of her new consciousness. The very first part of Savitri, Book 1, Canto 1, is called the Symbol Dawn because it is a symbol of the dawning of consciousness. In the second line of Book 1, Canto 1, Sri Aurobindo calls dawn the divine event. The divine event is the total spiritual change that we all aspire for when we do Sri Aurobindo's yoga. He describes it symbolically when dawn fills the sky for a few brief moments before it turns into the light of man's usual day. He uses this coming of dawn again to symbolize spiritual attainment when the king reaches the lowest depths of the vital planes, where he realizes the purposes of night and death. He writes, night opened and vanished like a gulf of dream. Into being's gap, scooped out as empty space, in which nature had filled the place of absent God, there poured a wide, intimate, and blissful dawn. Dawn is an ancient Vedic symbol of spiritual awakening. In his book, The Secret of the Vedas, Sri Aurobindo writes that dawn is the first condition of Vedic realization. By dawn's increasing illumination, the whole nature of man is changed. Through her, he arrives at the truth. Through her, he enjoys the beatitude. Sri Aurobindo also says that the foundation of these dawns, these spiritual awakenings in us, is the supramental world in us. It is already there, unrealized. It is our foundation of the truth. And then he writes about the dawn. He says, dawn divine is the coming of the Godhead. She is the light of the truth and the felicity pouring on us from the Lord of wisdom and bliss. The dawn in Savitri's Night of God brings a day that is the priest of a sacrifice of joy. The priest of the divine dawn of spiritual awakening is called Agni in the Vedas. Sri Aurobindo says that for us, Agni is the divine will force. He is the flame of purification that works in our vital being to convert it, to make it progress from a self-willed, uncontrolled energy to the energy that carries us into our higher evolution and through it to the goal. Mother calls Agni the soul's flame of transformation. She says, Agni makes you see what a vast vista of possible improvement stretches in front of you by filling you with a keen sense of your present insufficiency. You no longer seek praise from others, whereas all criticism comes as a welcome fuel to your humble aspiration towards the truth. No longer do you feel depressed or slighted by the hostilities of others. Another remarkable sign of the conversion of your vital, owing to Agni's influence, is that you face your difficulties and obstacles with a smile. You simply chase away depression with a smile. 100 mistakes do not matter to you. Agni the priest, the flame of spiritual awakening, the dawn of spiritual progress, has done his work for Savitri. Now that Savitri's consciousness has returned to moving forward in search of her soul, and she has had the experience of the Absolute in her own vast emptiness, she can recognize the presence of her own soul, which is always connected to the Absolute. Sri Aurobindo writes, "As if an old remembered dream come true, she recognized in her prophetic mind the imperishable luster of that sky, the tremulous sweetness of that happy air, and, covered from mind's view and life's approach, the mystic cavern in the sacred hill, and knew the dwelling of her secret soul." Savitri, the Book of Yoga, the Finding of the Soul. Onward she passed, seeking the soul's mystic cave. At first she stepped into a night of God. The light was quenched that helps the laboring world, the power that struggles and stumbles in our life. This inefficient mind gave up its thoughts, the striving heart its unavailing hopes. All knowledge failed, and the ideas forms, and wisdom screened in awe her lowly head, feeling a truth too great for thought or speech, formless, ineffable, forever the same. An innocent and holy ignorance adored, like one who worships formless God, the unseen light she could not claim nor own. In a simple purity of emptiness, her mind knelt down before the unknowable. All was abolished save her naked self and the prostrate yearning of her surrendered heart. There was no strength in her, no pride of force. The lofty burning of desire had sunk ashamed, a vanity of separate self. The hope of spiritual greatness fled. Salvation she asked not, nor a heavenly crown. Humility seemed now too proud a state. Herself was nothing. God alone was all. Yet God she knew not, but only knew he was. A sacred darkness brooded now within. The world was a deep darkness, great and nude. This void held more than all the teeming worlds. This blank felt more than all that time has borne. This dark knew, dumbly, immensely, the unknown. But all was formless, voiceless, infinite. As might a shadow walk in a shadowy scene, a small knot passing through a mightier knot, a knight of person in a bare outline crossing a fathomless impersonal night, silent she moved, empty and absolute. In endless time her soul reached a wide end. The space less vast became her spirit's place. At last a change approached. The emptiness broke. A wave rippled within. The world had stirred. Once more her inner self became her space. There was felt a blissful nearness to the goal. Heaven leaned low to kiss the sacred hill. The air trembled with passion and delight. A rose of splendor on a tree of dreams, the face of dawn out of mooned twilight grew. Day came. Priest, of a sacrifice of joy into the worshipping silence of her world. He carried immortal luster as his robe, trailed heaven like a purple scarf, and wore as his vermilion caste mark a red sun. As if an old remembered dream come true, she recognized in her prophetic mind the imperishable luster of that sky, the tremulous sweetness of that happy air, and, covered from mind's view and life's approach, the mystic cavern in the sacred hill, and knew the dwelling of her secret soul.